Ready when you are. Thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Tuesday, February 18th, 2015. I'm opening a meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government, and I'm now opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 5502, Department of Administrative Services. Mr. Siebert, anything you want to get us started with?
Madam Chair, I just note that you have some responses from questions on Monday saved up in OLIS today.
Thank you. Mr. Jordan, Mr. Pack, anybody else who'd like to join us? Ms. Savara, thank you. And Representative Smith, I'm going to pass this right back over to you.
Oh, you were good. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Am I chairing today?
Yeah, if that's okay with you.
Perfect.
Thank
Welcome.
You very much. It's been a sort of complicated week, and I want to thank folks once again for your patience.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Jordan. I'm the director of the Department of Administrative Services and the state's chief operating officer. Today, I will be most of the show, and Barry will be the pretty.
Barry, you're the eye candy.
And he fills the role better than I do. Today, we wanted to talk a little bit about our capital projects and also some change management initiatives that we have going. We'll go through our KPMs at the end, and I hope this will not take the entire time today, and we'll have time for discussion. So, enterprise asset management, the proposed capital projects we have. These are kind of the categories of work that we have going in capital. We'll talk a little bit about different projects that have these kinds of components to them, whether it's demolition and remediation, or we've got an acquisition that's driven by a business case analysis that we'll talk a little bit about. We've got some buildings that are in need of renovation, some seismic retrofits, et cetera. And then we also have a project that is really a partnership with local government in an attempt to work on some economic development issues in a local community. So, on DAS-owned buildings, we have a number of proposals in the budget, capital proposals. They really fall into two big categories, the capital program, which is paid for on a revolving fund basis. I think you know that we take a certain amount of our uniform rent, which accounts for depreciation on certain elements of our buildings, and we put that into a fund, and we do projects with them. We also occasionally, on the capital construction projects, do issue some short-term debt on those, and that debt is paid back from uniform rent. So we have a couple of different ways that we finance, but the repayment is all from uniform rent and those schedules. The kinds of projects, just to give you a sense, in the improvement category, they are smaller projects, things like North Mall sidewalk repairs around some buildings, fire alarm systems are being replaced. Emergency projects, we are asking for $500,000 allowance just in case. So you may recall the archive building had a roof problem when we had some very heavy rains this last fall, and we had to do some emergency repairs there. And also, as we've talked about in the past, a certain amount of money being asked for to do energy efficiency improvements, either lighting or control issues in some cases, and some HVAC questions, but most of the HVAC fall into the capital construction. They're larger. Those, some examples, we're going to start phase one of the entire window replacement at the Portland State Office Building. If you're familiar with that building, it's a multi-story, large commercial structure, office structure in Portland. We're asking for $1.5 million this biennia to do phase one of those window replacements. We're upgrading the emergency generator at the DEQ Public Health Laboratory up in the Portland area. And then one of those big HVAC things, we're going to be changing out the cooling tower for the Human Services Building down here. So those are examples of the kind of projects that fall into those categories. And then in the capital program that would be funded through Q bonds, our request there for capital debt, I'm going to talk a little bit in a moment about the executive building renovation. And also about the investment acquisition project very briefly. But the $30 million one is a bit unique, and I don't have a separate slide for that one. We have, as you know, been doing an assessment of all of our buildings. If I might say, aging each of the component parts, so actually looking at their life cycle, where are they in their life cycle, where would they normally, we would expect, need to be replaced. Trying to put together a schedule for all of those things so that we can figure out a way to try and even out those things over time. We believe that to do that, we will need to make an infusion of capital into a fund at the front end to do, first of all, do some very large projects, and secondly, to capitalize that fund so that we can even out the uniform rent payments over time to make that on a predictable pace, if you will. And since it's debt, we have some constraints. And so if it's tax-free, non-taxable debt, we have a requirement to spend those funds within 3 years. So what you would see if we were to approve this is you'd see some front-loaded large projects that could be done with non-taxable debt at the very beginning of the process. We would then issue a certain amount of taxable debt to infuse capital into the sinking fund and be able to equalize those payments over time. If you look at debt right now, it's really a very small difference between non-taxable and taxable debt at this time. And so there are tipping points as to whether this is a good idea or not, but it, when you think about it long term over significant amounts of time regarding keeping these buildings up, once we were to repay this debt, it would put us on a pay-as-you-go, much the way we talked about the equipment at the data center, rather than a pay-as-you-use and continuing to issue debt over what would be the really long term. So we can talk in more detail about that, but it's a proposal, and I'm sure we'll be talking with Mr. Siebert a lot more about that issue as we go. So let me get to the projects.
Thank you, Ms. Jordan.
Sure.
There is a project underway to a plan underway to seismic refit the Capitol and redo a number of stuff. Could you walk us through where that is right now? I mean, has the money been appropriated? Has the debt service been approved? How much is it? So forth.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Whitsitt, I'm probably not the best person to answer this question because the project is being managed out of the Legislative Administrative Office, not by us. It's this building, and the legislature owns this building. So your staff are managing that project. We've been involved in discussions, so I can give you at least a rough answer of where I know the project is.
And I could share with you, Senator Whitsitt, I have good detailed information on this. I could get a copy of everything you need on it.
Okay, that'd be fine. I'd like to have on the record where we are as far as has the money already been authorized?
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, in the last legislative session, last long session where we did a budget, I believe there were $35 million appropriated for design and pre-design work. As you can imagine with this project, there was a huge amount of geotechnical work under this building that was done, I know, in the last 2 years. Also a lot of pre-planning on where would the legislature go during a 3 to 5 year period that this building would be under construction. So a lot of work's been done, but there was $35 million appropriated, I believe, in this coming cycle to actually begin to do the project. I believe there's going to be an ask of somewhere between $150 million and $200 million. I'm giving you a very broad range because I'm not sure what that ask will ultimately
be. That's the debate that's going to be occurring
right.
In the session.
So that's what I know about where we are in the project right now.
And if I may,
so we've already authorized $35 million, and part of that has already been spent.
That's my understanding, Senator.
And then the ask would be for another $150 to $200.
That's the debate. I think the chair is correct to characterize it that way.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair.
And just to be clear, we will have legislative administration in front of us, in front of this committee down the road, of course, as you well know. And so, and I'm just putting on the record, Senator. I know you know. I'm telling the rest of the world. So we should definitely plan on talking about this with them. And, of course, capital construction, which we'll be taking this up additionally. Am I right, Representative Smith? And you serve on that subcommittee. Do you, Senator Whitsitt? I don't remember. Okay. Anyway.
So the first project I'd like to mention that was on the last slide is the executive building. It's the building at the west end of the park here that DAS occupies. In 2008, there was a risk assessment done of that executive building, and it noted a number of both code and safety upgrades that were needed. You can see the list of things, the general categories. I can tell you that we've had employees trapped in the elevators. They are very old. That building, in case you don't know, is a renovated expansion of an old post office. So the west end of the building is the old Salem Post Office. The east side that faces the Capitol is the new side of the building. When that work was done, and the reason I mention it is that mechanical electrical system issue, when that expansion was done, the HVAC system and the mechanical system for the old building was in the back corner on the ground floor. Mm. We built a building onto it on the back side, left the mechanical where it was, and now it is inside the building, in a place where only Cirque du Soleil performers can get to, and I'm being only somewhat facetious here, and it is the original HVAC from the building. And so it is the thing that worries us the most. As you can see in the first bullet, the project is a 17-month planned exit of the building to do the work. I can tell you that we would be out of the building a longer amount of time if it was unplanned. And so if that HVAC system completely failed and we had to exit the building in the middle of winter or summer, it would take longer than that. So we're proposing a project that's really been on the books and has been actually considered a number of times since 2008. It's back again to try and get that project done. The next one I want to mention is the North Campus for the Oregon State Hospital. We've talked a little bit about that already. It is about 430,000 square feet of buildings. There are multiple buildings on the campus. You can see them in the graphic. They are filled with asbestos, lead paint, just a number of problems. They have they are in varying degrees of disrepair. You can see from the third bullet, we spend somewhere around $1.1 to $1.2 million per biennium to keep them secure, to keep the fire flow system working in the building, a number of different complications there.
Two questions on that.
Certainly.
Offhand, you happen to know how many acres property that is?
It's 40, I want to say 40... three, but it's in the just above 40.
Okay, and on that, let's just
the entire site.
It has an appraisal been completed to share with us that 13 million's a good number?
We've done preliminary appraisals with real estate developers to get that number. We worked with Leland and Consultants to work on alternatives. They're very good in this business. It would depend on when you go to market.
It would depend on a lot of things.
But the number we have for if we tried to sell it today, that's if we could sell it in its current state. I don't think we could. But if we could, we think about $1.6 million is
what we get. So the last question, do you know, are there any buildings of his historical significance on that property?
The one building we are sure is the Dome Building. It's in the southern, the lower part, and it's the big white building you see at the bottom.
Is that part of
the
demolition plan as well?
It is not on the demolition plan. We've already done preliminary work with the City of Salem to partition that building away from the rest.
Would it be possible to, because I don't want to use our committee's time here, would it be possible for me to get just a a summary or a report on this?
I'd be happy to meet with you and get your report on it. Yeah. Certainly. No, okay. No problem. Okay. We have, again, that building is the one that is designated as a historical structure by the City of Salem. There is quite a bit of community interest in preserving that building, and it is a building worth preserving. Okay. I mean, we occupy the building now.
Okay, just a good executive summary. It's,
sure.
Yeah, I'm not looking for...
too much. Well, yeah. We know a fair amount about this site.
Okay, thank you.
So the proposal here is for general fund funding. Of $8.3 million, we are prepared, if approved, to do that demolition work immediately and attempt to get that done as quickly as possible. The grounds and the buildings do present a safety risk. For instance, in one of the buildings, there is a swimming pool. It has a direct access to the outside of the building. We have it secure, but it is a direct access to the outside of the building. We have to keep it filled with water, because if you don't, the pressure from the outside groundwater will crush it. So we keep it filled with water, we maintain it. But again, those kinds of hazards are the things we're really concerned about here. We did tour some leadership and some members through the property this last summer.
Senator
and talked
Johnson,
to them
did you have a question?
I didn't. I was just moving the mic so I could see Mr. Jordan more clearly for when I do have a question.
I've got an eye on Senator Whitson.
Thank you. Mr. Jordan, I'm sure you've said this before, but would you refresh us as how DAS came to acquire ownership of this property?
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsett, the property was being managed and occupied and used by the Oregon Health Authority and the Department of Human Services when they were together.
And who owned it?
It's a little vague, but our understanding is DAS has always owned this property. But it was in the possession. They were doing the maintenance and operations of it for as long back as I know, when it was mostly staff and part of the Oregon State Hospital.
Do you, I know this precedes you, but do you have any idea whose responsibility it was to see that whether this property was maintained properly?
I would say at least in a gentleman's agreement, it was the Department of Human Services back then when they were combined that was running this as the Oregon State Hospital.
So there was really no oversight?
Not from our department, is my understanding. Now, there may have been employees over the years that were talking about the facility, but we didn't have an official role at that time. So, and that's my understanding, Senator. You're right. I wasn't here.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan.
I just have one more question. Why the push to sell the property? Why not just clean it up and hold it for a future state asset?
Mr. Chairman, we have a lot of property. We have way more property than I could ever imagine this organization would need. Also, as a business case, we are attempting to consolidate more and more of our employees in this mall area. The other issue is, from a City of Salem perspective, if this property is in private ownership, it's on the tax rolls.
Good point.
And
good point.
We own lots of property that currently is not on the tax rolls. And so we're really attempting, with the long-range facility planning and thinking about our business, trying to optimize our holdings. That's both a location and quantity issue. So I didn't know if you had.
No, I was waving at the nice policeman.
Okay. We like our nice policeman.
Welcome.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
So the next property I'd like to talk about is the Blue Mountain Recovery Center. We've had some brief discussion about this property. There's been quite a push over the last couple of years after the closure of the property to attempt to do some things to try and help the community out there. It was, when it was in operation, a fairly significant number of well-paid jobs. They are no longer in the community. We don't have a particular need for this property any longer. And so what has been proposed and was proposed at E-Board is that there be a general fund appropriation for us to do demolition on both the hospital itself and on the property across the street where there are multiple small buildings. doing demolition and environmental remediation, much the same as the North Campus building, and preparing that site for transfer to the city of Pendleton. As you can see from the bullet, if approved, actually it has been approved. We're going through the process to be able to do the demolition work and have it done by June 30 of this year.
Senator Johnson.
I would just comment, because I was around the periphery of this conversation at the E-Board, I think this is an excellent outcome. The loss of the Blue Mountain Recovery Center to the community was substantial. And it was, for the new members, it was quite a divisive argument. Representative Jensen, who had served in this building honorably for years, was simply crushed that we couldn't come to a better resolution. The sucking noise that you hear was the jobs exiting. And I think in this instance, this was an equitable resolution to a very emotionally charged problem. And I congratulate the people that got to yes on this.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, we're often one of the biggest corporate entities in communities in Oregon. And we are attempting, when we move people around or we consolidate offices for a very good business purpose, trying to be very sensitive about the impacts that we have on communities either way, when we're either developing a new facility or removing folks from a facility.
Senator Whitsitt, you had a question?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Jordan, as I recall our conversations in this committee and the E-Board, there's another part to that, and that is that land must be completely contaminant-free when it's transferred to the city so that it's shovel-ready.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Whitsitt, that's our understanding also, the direction from E-Board. So, just for the members' reference, there is a bill on this property to for the conveyance of the property. It's Senate Bill 671. I guess also for the reference of the committee, so you know, we will be working with folks on that bill. There's some fairly significant complications for this property regarding things like rezoning and the preservation of a particular building, which they've asked for, and making sure that's on a tax lot, a parcel that's legally defined, and that building can actually be used on that parcel. So we've got a few complications to work through, and we'll be working to make sure the bill can pass in a way that it can be used.
I might just add, for the sake of your negotiating leverage, that the mayor is extremely supportive of getting a resolution. So I assume if you need municipal action, that it would be forthcoming.
I have no doubt. I have a long relationship with Mayor Houck, and he's great. So the next I wanted to speak of is the Mill Creek Corporate Center. Some on this committee may have a recollection of this. The saga here goes back to 2002. When there was a partnership created with the city, and there was a bill passed, House Bill 2923, in the 2001 session, directing the Department of Corrections, which owned the property, and DAS, to work together with the city for on the sale of the property. That was done. A master plan was done. A development plan was done, again, with some consulting help from the private sector. A master developer was brought on board. Unfortunately, I think the timing, you know, like all things in life, timing is the most important thing. 2008 was the year that a master developer was brought on, Capstone. Not exactly the time to be attempting to get financing and be the master developer of a large industrial and commercial parcel. So that financing by Capstone, they could not obtain financing, and we ended that relationship in 2009. We are currently working with the city and their urban renewal district to market the property. There is interest in the property now. The market has returned. There is one substantially large potential user that's interested in a significant portion of the property. As the second, or I guess the third bullet notes, we have done some Infrastructure improvements. There are some roads, and there's water system, and there's water storage for fire flow, et cetera, for the site for industrial development. That was done with bonding. Those bonds, I believe, are scheduled to be paid off this biennium, before the end of this biennium. But there was about $10 million of infrastructure remaining to be put in, but we are approaching that as a sale-by-sale extension of infrastructure and incorporating.
Let me ask on this, and I guess I should know, but I don't. So the state of Oregon owns this land?
Yes, sir.
And we went and built an industrial park here?
Yes, sir.
That's all I need to know. I think I can put other dots together. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
We
Senator Whitsitt. Let's go Senator Whitsitt, then I'll come to you, Senator.
Thank you. Mr. Jordan, on the Mill Creek Corporate, where is this property?
Southeast Salem. It's out south
or
of
Turner.
Highway 20.
Out toward Turner.
Yes.
Okay.
Out that way.
So you're estimating that 250 acres is worth $25 million, which is $100,000 an acre. We're out there, and the stuff right here in town is worth $300,000 an acre.
Okay. There are discussions going on. That's all I can tell you, Senator, right now.
Senator Johnson, you had a question.
A comment and a question for our new colleagues. This site has been long discussed in Salem. This was to have been the original corpus that would have funded the Cultural Trust. There was a plan afoot to have sold this, and that would have created the multi-million dollar corpus. And over time, all sorts of different activities have happened out there. The DPSST, Public Safety Training Facility, is there. And I guess, as evidenced by the chair's question, I would assume that a lot of us have an interest in what we're doing in the industrial development business when there are folks with expertise in doing industrial sites. Why are we treading into territory where we do not have a core competency, at least one that I'm aware of?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I'll take that as a rhetorical. No, I'm kidding. It's a great point. I think, and I, again, I'm speculating a bit. I think.
Yeah, you are. You're building an industrial park. Sorry.
It's a good one. Ba-dum-bum. I believe that in 2002 and 2003, there were probably individuals here who saw, a fat hog. By the time they got their act together, got infrastructure in, were marketing the property, it was 2008.
Right.
Not the hog had lost a lot of weight. I'm not trying to justify us being in the development business. Quite frankly, you're right. It isn't our core competency, and we probably shouldn't be there. We're attempting to partner with the city of Salem and now potentially even private a master developer, if we can find one, and there is interest now in the site, and get out of this business. So I couldn't agree more, Senator.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Chair Smith. I just want to clarify, because we talked about this, I think it was last week. So do you have an understanding of all the properties that we own at this point, or is that something you're still working on? I'm sorry if it's a sore point I'm bringing up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Taylor, we have an inventory of all state property.
Okay.
I can't vouch for accuracy on that inventory outside of DAS.
Okay. Follow.
Yeah, please.
Thank you. Are you going to be developing a schedule for selling them over 10, 20? I think you probably know where I'm going. But.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Taylor, it's a great question and absolutely the right question to be asking. What we're trying to do with these properties, once we have them inventoried and we understand where they are, the marketability of them, a number of things, compared to our need as a business. Where are our businesses going? What's the most effective footprint for us? And then developing a strategy. I will tell you my intuition, knowing the data I know now, is that we will be divesting ourselves of a lot of properties over the next decades, let's put it that way. But right now, we're developing the data and the plans to know just where will we need property and where can we afford to get out of the business? Because, as I mentioned before, there are impacts to us owning property in communities, and we're trying to optimize those.
Follow up. Now, this may seem unrelated. However, in my mind, they're not. It's not unrelated. I also serve on the Human Services and Housing Committee, and we just recently had the Department of Transportation come forward and discussions about their inventory. And apparently, you're not alone. Apparently, there are other folks struggle with maintaining inventories in other areas. I'll just say that generally. Mm-hmm. And so the reason why that was being discussed is we were talking about a shortage of land for housing, for affordable housing. So maybe someone's already brought this all to your attention. Okay. And so I just wanted to see if there's a two-part question. One, I wanted to follow up. I think it would be make sense that there be a 20-year plan for selling the properties. And I know you're a very competent individual, Mr. Jordan, and
all evidence to the contrary.
Yeah. So it's very important, in my understanding and the training that I've had, that when we have these very expensive asset management, that there's a schedule and that we sell these and we make certain that we're getting advised. And if we don't know what we're doing to the level needed, that we bring the folks on board to advise us so that we sell them in the appropriate order. And then on top of it, will there be some sort of coordination with the other agencies so that when things like we're hearing that there's no place to build affordable housing, that maybe we could help out some of other agencies? Do you see what I'm
Mr. Chairman, at? Representative Taylor, I see what you mean exactly, and I couldn't agree more. One of the things, if you'll let me for a second,
mm-hmm.
thematics we've been pounding on now for almost 7 days is an enterprise view of what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. So where we're trying to go with this long-range planning is not just DAS property,
yes.
but understanding all of our holdings,
thank
comparing
you.
That both to business need, employees, location, all those issues. But we also have policy questions before us, and one of those is affordable housing. And where are those things most needed? Where can the public sector, because we already have an asset,
yes.
potentially help with an affordable housing project? So those, you're right on with the kinds of coordination discussions that have to occur, and to be very blunt and honest, haven't always occurred real well because of the fragmentation of the enterprise. And so one of these issues around COO and ELT and improving government and all those kind of collaborative efforts is to understand better those dynamics across all of our agencies.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you for the question. There was something I passed over that I wanted to mention before I go to kind of our business management initiatives. And it is back on... Which slide is? I don't have numbers here. That one. The bottom bullet. We are asking in the capital finance, the Q bond section of our ask, for some money, and I'm going to leave it at that. We are in discussions right now about acquisition of a building. We've done the business case on this, on the alternatives, life cycle ownership or lease costs, taken, maintenance and all the rest of the issues. And in this case, there is a pretty significant life cycle advantage for us to be in an ownership position rather than a lease position. It is a building in Salem. That's about all I can tell you, but I wanted to make sure you knew it was there. Happy to have conversations with you offline about this piece and bring, I told Mr. Siebert earlier, we'll bring him the business case numbers on those.
Senator Johnson.
Just as a quick question, when you said building in Salem, it reminded me of the schools for the blind and the schools for the deaf. And I thought I drove by there the other day and saw demolition happening. Are all the issues around that resolved, and have those facilities been sold to Salem Hospital and they're now being demolished, or is that ongoing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I know there is some demolition going there. I'm not aware of all the the relationships. We can get you answers, though, to that.
I was just curious.
We can get you some answers to what's going on those facilities. So lastly, for me, I wanted to go through a list of a few things we're doing, which are more...
Go back to Mill Creek just real
oh,
quick.
Oh, sure.
I just want to make sure I want to understand. On those marketing efforts, are we working with Business Oregon in using their marketing tools to promote this property?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the short answer is yes. The one entity that we are talking about was brought to us by Business Oregon.
And so what I would share, and this is no reflection on you or the department, these folks are competing with your community. They're competing with the Port of Morrow. They're competing with businesses who may want to locate in Lakeview or Vernonia. You know, the state of Oregon sends out business leads. And they say, we've got a company who's looking for 40 acres of industrially zoned land adjacent to a freeway or a major highway. We're looking for water, sewer, et cetera, workforce, et cetera. Well, if Business Oregon's putting this into the mix, they're now competing with your communities and my communities. And I mean, granted, we need to market it because we've got to do something with it, but I just want to make sure everyone understands that conflict we have going here. I just want to share that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your point. It is a good one. I guess I would see it in a slightly different way. We happen to be the owners. I think the competition is between your community and the city of Salem. That's who will really benefit from development. And if we weren't the owner and some private entity was, Business Oregon would still be referring this site to the city of Salem if, in fact, the site met the need.
That is fair. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's fair. Yeah. That is fair.
Chair Smith, to take your proposal a step further, I think the difference is that the Oregon Business Department has the Oregon Solutions team to manipulate the rules and regulations, whereas a private sector one does not, which does give them something of an unfair advantage. And I think we really need to perhaps, in a better times, we could focus on getting some of those rules and regulations out of the way so that the private sector could do it on their own.
Right. Let's move on.
Certainly.
Yeah.
So a few things we're doing, I just wanted to bring to the committee's attention. These are what I would call change management processes that we're working. These are both unique to DAS, and then some of them are enterprise-wide. So the first one, reevaluating entrepreneurial management model decisions. You'll recall I mentioned earlier in our discussions that in July of 2012, we reorganized the agency. The basic split was the policy and service split, but really trying to figure out ways to be much more a much better partner with our customers and our clients, and also really doing our job regarding setting statewide policy and holding people accountable. As is the case, anytime you do a large restructuring of an organization, you will get some of it wrong. So this last fall, our management team got together and did an evaluation of the first 2 years of the organizational change. And there were some things that we, said, boy, we screwed that part up and we need to fix it. And so there are three packages in the list of packages, 140, 141, and 142. They are not increases in our budget. They are the transferring of a few employees between some of the divisions where we got it wrong, I think. We moved some people, and we actually should have left them where they were because of the way the business operates. And it only involves 8 employees, but there are 3 packages that are moving discrete people between divisions at DAS. Again, not an increase in the budget, but allocating them by the way we do our budget. So we need a package to you. The second is called the Oregon Management Project. I believe I've mentioned in the past that at the enterprise level, enterprise leadership team level, we've really come to the realization that we need to pretty much completely reform our relationship with the state's managers. We have over 4,000 managerial positions, supervisory managerial positions in state government. For a lot of reasons over a long period of time, that relationship, I think, has fallen into a bit of disrepair. And when I say that, I mean the systems and structures that we use to manage, evaluate, recruit, retain, train, and compensate the management staff in state government has been, I think, neglected for a long period of time. For example, we have not done a comprehensive classification study of our management staff in over a generation. So we have classification descriptions that are 20 plus years old. And the world has changed a lot in that period of time, and the work has changed a lot in that period of time. So we are currently in the middle of doing a class and compensation study for all management staff. We are currently examining and looking at revamping the recruitment and retention and training workforce development programs, because we know the managers of the future are going to need different skill sets than the managers of the past. One of them, just by way of example, is that our business model is changing to a much more collaborative business model, whether it is between programs that sit in different agencies or it's between levels of government, to think about how we collaborate better with local government and nonprofits in the delivery of state service.
Let me ask this question.
Certainly.
In corporate America, there was a trend, I'm not sure if it's still there, to allow folks to work from home.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have state employees who work from home?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, yes, we do. We offer in certain environments, we offer flexible time, or there are work from home options.
So I'm just brainstorming here.
Sure.
Is there opportunities in some of our most economically impacted communities for the state of Oregon to direct their jobs to, say, Vernonia, and create 5 family wage jobs in Vernonia to where people could work from home?
That would telework.
Have a telework.
I think it's certainly possible, Mr. Chairman. We have folks, for instance, at the state data center who do diagnostic work and on computer systems, basically, and they, many of them can work from home because it's all done remotely anyway.
And I would never mean any disrespect to our larger cities on that, but if you took 5 jobs and put them in Warrenton, that's huge.
No, I couldn't agree more. I don't think we've looked at it from that perspective regarding the use of telework to have jobs in a certain community.
I think maybe,
but it's worth looking into.
And I think maybe it's something the legislature at some point,
sure,
asks that question. Doesn't make sense.
It's a great question. So this project, I wanted to give you a sense of time frames. Again, I mentioned we'd been kind of out of the blocks first with the classification system because it's the oldest and kind of the most dilapidated piece. We hope to finish that new classification system this summer. We are currently going through all those classes and defining the actual language in the classification definition and working with agencies to allocate jobs to those classifications. We hope to be finished with that this summer. And at that time, we'll be ready to go to market and look at how the market treats those jobs regarding compensation.
Senator Johnson.
A million years ago, I came here as a young agency director, and two of the biggest pieces of fiction that I wrote were job reclassification support statements for people in the agency. My point is not so much to out myself as to suggest that how those definitions are written, they turn on such fine points about whether you're a principal executive this or a principal executive that or an administrative assistant 2 or 3 or whatever. And I hope that some degree of rigor is brought to this whole issue in defining these classes of people, because employees move so amorphously through, and then we have all sorts of, again, for new folks, we have all sorts of funny little ways to compensate people. Comp time, working out of class, double filling positions. It is the kind of thing that I imagine would give a private sector HR professional apoplexy. I hope that there is some effort to bring coherence to this system so that it is intelligible to the public and, frankly, intelligible to managers. And it is not as easily manipulated and abused as it has been my observation that the potential exists to do.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, to avoid what would be an hour-long answer, I'll just say I agree with you.
God, I love that. Would you just say it one more time? I don't hear that very often.
For the record. The next project, I think I've mentioned this one also. Before I arrived 4 years ago, probably for about 4 years before that, some agencies have begun to use a private sector consulting firm called Mass Ingenuity, which comes into an organization and helps them develop a management framework. And it's really a strategic planning framework, right? It's vision and mission and values, but goes further in breaking down your business processes, provides accountability regime, quarterly reporting of metrics, accountability invested in individuals for those metrics, et cetera, et cetera. Many of you have probably seen similar systems. When I came on, I think there were around 10 agencies at some level of maturity using this system and working with this vendor. We believed that relationship, while not bad, and I appreciate agencies wanting to do this, we believe that there should be a consistent framework across all agencies for management of their structures. And let me add, I was observing what could be the potential for Sherman's march through state agencies. and negotiating a new contract with each state agency, which if you think about that over the long term, is a lot of millions of dollars. So we renegotiated that contract with Mass Ingenuity. Now agencies can still use it, but they must go through us and a work order system, and we have a contract that limits the amount that they would get for that work. It does allow agencies to independently get certain services from them that are management consulting services also. But this basic framework discussion, we have gotten some control over that now. But I want the committee to know that my goal is that we would get most state employees working under a common management framework. So, as was noted earlier by Senator Johnson, we have a lot of employees that move from agency to agency to agency. I think it's just incredibly more efficient and effective for people when they go from an agency to an agency that they understand how the place is managed and the framework within which performance management is done for the agency. And if that's a common frame, obviously the programs are different from agency to agency.
Senator Johnson.
A common frame for management. So.
It's not just you touched on a really sore subject, and I'm reflecting on the comments made by our new governor this morning about restoring faith in government. I think one of the other things that there has been a proclivity to do is to move people who have failed to perform in one place to another place. And you are talking about expectations for performance management. I want to make that less oblique. People that have failed in one agency pop up miraculously with high-paid jobs in another agency. And I think that the public tolerance for that kind of behavior is at an all-time low. And I would suggest that as you talk about redoing management practices, that repugnant practice of rewarding bad behavior by making sure there's a soft landing, that we abandon that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I agree.
Twice in one hearing.
I know.
I mean to be flippant.
Senator Whitsitt.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Just following up on Senator Johnson's comments, I mean, from my perspective, management, you have people that manage people, and you have people that manage systems, and you have people that manage finances. They're not all equal, and their skills aren't equal, and yet it seems like, particularly with the directors and deputy directors at high level, our selection there is no rhyme or reason or purpose apparent in some of those, in many of those appointments. I know that's those appointments are above your pay grade, but when it comes to a deputy director, do you weigh in on that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Whitsitt, everyone in an agency under current structure and management is reporting to the agency director. The governor has authority over many of those directors, but not all. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of them report to boards and commissions, as you're well aware. The standards for hiring agency heads is a different standard usually than the people beneath them. Mm-hmm. I will tell you one thing we're doing differently in this classification that I think gets at some of your question, maybe not all. Senator Johnson referred to the PEM series, professional executive manager, and they're very broad kind of categories of level of management. Mm-hmm. So A through J, I think, is what we have now. We are revamping that, basically throwing out the PEM series and putting much more definition around the what we call job families, if you will. So, for instance, scientists, engineers, those kinds of folks, financial services folks, accountants and budget folks. So we have about 20 of those different definitions, if you will. And as we move through time and adopt this, I would suspect that we will get more specific about the experience, the training, of our managers, because they'll be in these families with these kinds of more granular definitions of what we expect out of those managers. So I'm hopeful we'll get closer to, I think, what was embedded in your question.
So you won't have the idea is to perhaps not to have a individual with a BA in English managing people that have PhDs in geology.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Whitsitt, while I would say the percentage chance that we would have that would be relatively low, I will also not put aspersions on English majors to say that one couldn't be a great manager.
Thank you.
So we have 30 minutes.
And I will be finished soon.
Okay, I want to make sure we have time
Chair.
For our chief financial office.
Yes, I will be done. I only have one more bullet to give you, and this one is a prospective bullet. We had a fairly extensive discussion with you with this new state CIO, Alex Pettit, around IT generally. One of the things that we are coming to the realization of, and I think we mentioned this during that day, is that we fail in IT more often because we don't understand our business well enough to define the problem we're trying to fix than we do from failed implementation of an IT project. So we've come to the conclusion that we need to go through some kind of process and start to, then this is going to be a long-term effort in maturation of our understanding of what we do, and probably with slices of the organization, not the organization as a whole, and I mean the enterprise, begin to go through a process to understand our business better at a more granular level. And we call it enterprise architecture. There are multiple methodologies to do this. The state CIO happens to believe in one very strongly and has brought that as an example. We're looking right now at attempting to take one policy slice of the organization and kind of run it to ground, if you will, through this methodology, and bring back to you some recommendations of how we think we could do our work better, A, and B, understand when we think we need a technology solution, being much more able to define our business problem. I will tell you, I don't think we can escape this in administration. I've talked to you about HR and IT and finance and budget and procurement, those core system issues. We've got to go through some process, and we believe this enterprise architecture approach is the right one to do, to go through those business processes, define them at a very granular level, and then envision what that looks like going forward. Only then can we actually make a recommendation about what IT system really will help us fly with that. And so and by way of just very broad example, some of you have seen the Hackett data. One of the findings there is how many of our business processes are still on paper, how many of them are fragmented across multiple agencies. These questions go to organizational structure. They go to accountability and authority. They go to a lot of different questions about how we do our business. So just get ready. This is kind of a foreshadowing of a much more deep conversation about our understanding of the business we're in and where we think we're going in the future. I've mentioned a lot of changes that we think are coming for our business. This would allow us to understand them at a much deeper level.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. And I guess while you're understanding them at a deeper level, Mr. Jordan, one of the things that at the beginning of the session becomes just manifoldly clear to me is the perception of DAS of itself and what its needs are versus the perception of its customers and what their needs are.
Mm-hmm.
I learned, for example, that right now a charge, a $500,000 charge to OSP's budget is going to occur because all of the LEDs, the background checks that are being conducted statewide are now being forced to come into your system. And I further think I understand that even if a police officer in St. Helens runs my license plate, that that's a charge against OSP because it has to go through your system. So right out of the bat, here's poor old OSP that's struggling to keep troopers on the road. And I, for one, subscribe to the theory that one of the fundamental roles of government is to preserve the public peace and safety. We're stripping troopers, and he's gone, so I'm not even pandering to him. He's not here to hear me. But we're stripping the ability of us to have adequate troopers on the road, and they're paying for IT services from you. The other thing that I'm hearing is that agencies, as they're trying to do information technology in this new world of managing it, is finding a conflicting series of instructions between DAS and LFO, and the question about whether or not LFO and DAS are communicating. They don't know where to go to get their instruction. They hear ricochet stories back and forth. And so I'm wondering if there are proper procedures in place for you to really take the pulse of your customer and give them the freedom to say this isn't working. I don't know whether they fear retaliation, that it's okay to come and bitch to a legislator, but it isn't okay to come and talk to you. I probably shouldn't have said that on the TV. Sorry.
It's okay. It's not a word they haven't heard before.
But my question is, there seems to be a disconnect, and I'm looking to your leadership to fix that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, I think we're making a lot of progress in dealing with our customers. Our customers now actually make the rules regarding these issues, like the OSP question, although I think that one's a little more complicated.
I was going to say, I don't think they made the rules that said whack our budget $500,000. There seems to be a certain...
The customer board makes those rules. And they represent OSP and all the other customers that use these systems. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't changes in those structures, which we'll talk a little bit about tomorrow, that have left the perception of winners and losers. There's no question. In some cases, that's true. When you move from a pure marginal cost charge for service formula and take a significant amount of that cost and put it into an assessment formula because it's core system cost, when you make that change, people are going to squawk. Some people are. Well, there's no question.
The payee.
Yeah, and there's more than just OSP on that list. However, it will be beyond my capability to stop individual agencies from talking to individuals about what they perceive to be a problem. I think they can come to us anytime and talk about these issues. The particular OSP issue that you referred to, I believe that payment for that service was being made in a different way before, but there was a payment.
And I think it was being made by DMV. And when ODOT and DMV were pushed into Scenic, then help me.
Well, there was a barter system going on for some time. When that barter was about equal, it wasn't a big problem. That barter has turned into an unequal, and ODOT can no longer do what they feel is subsidizing a general fund agency with trust fund money. So that was the catalyst for the discussion. Now, I don't know that we've arrived at the right conclusion yet, Senator, so we can talk more about it, but I think that was the catalyst for the change. So.
And I understand that. I get that. Thank you.
You bet. Right. I'm done, Mr. Chair.
You're done. So I see one more slide.
Oh, excuse me.
After that.
I'm sorry. Barry has a KPM slide.
Okay, so what I...
Real quick.
Mr.
Minutes?
Chair.
5 minutes.
Much shorter.
5 minutes.
Yeah.
3 minutes.
Yeah. For the record, Barry Pack, Deputy Chief Operating Officer with the Department of Administrative Services.
I'm setting my timer.
The main point that I was hoping to make for the committee today is going back to Mr. Jordan's comment about adopting a standard management system. DAS has adopted the NOW management system for Mass Ingenuity. We have gone through very extensive, rigorous process of defining a slew of metrics that we can use to manage our own internal performance. Some of them we felt were better measurements than what were in our key performance measurements. And so what we're coming to you this session principally with is to replace six of our previous performance measures with better measures that we are tracking now as part of our management system, so that we'll be tracking one set of data. They are reliable data that we can collect and report on that we feel actually is a better measurement of where we're going. So one example would be in the Office of Economic Analysis and Revenue Forecasts. The prior key performance measure was the percent of the advisory committee and council members who thought that the forecast was reliable. Well, that's a very subjective measurement. What we are proposing is actually to track the variance between the close of session forecast and each revenue forecast subsequent. Much more data-driven, much more objective and reliable. So that's the principal measure. We're asking for a few adjustments here and there. And that was my 3 minutes, and I've got 2 minutes for questions to get to my five.
Thank you, Representative Nathanson.
The point about the reliability of the forecast, I think we already even have that information. Is that correct? It seems that I have seen reviews over the years. This is what was projected, and this is what it turned out to be. So it's not like it's going to take a lot of work or resources. We just need to collect it and report on it.
Mr. Right? Chair, Representative Nathanson, we are collecting on it. We're just asking that to be our key performance measure.
Perfect. All right. Thank you. Senator Whitson.
Just briefly, Mr. Pack, I know you're fairly new to DAS, I believe, but you're changing 9 of 14 key performance measures. And in the years that I've been in this building, the way to avoid meeting performance metrics is to change them. So I would just ask you if you would provide us how many times since the key performance measures have been established that DAS has changed their key performance measures, because we've heard this almost every year that I've been on this committee. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitson will do that.
All right. So really quick, we're going to go to Ms. Savaro here in a moment. But tomorrow, before you folks head back, we're going to be diving into the rates and assessments. Please know, be prepared tomorrow to really help us go through a 101 on this. Be ready for us to ask lots of questions, because fundamentally this is really important for us as a budget committee to understand how those work. So I just want to make it really clear, tomorrow I won't have the gavel, but my co-chair and I are locked arm in arm
We are completely locked arm in arm. We just kind of, it's kind of, we're sort of interchangeable. You can't really tell, but we're twins separated at birth.
So let's be prepared for that tomorrow. All right. Thank you very much.
Sorry.
Welcome.
Hi. Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee, for the record, Janet Savaro with DAS, Chief Financial Office. I'm going to just briefly go over really fast the governor's budget that was proposed for DAS. So let's see.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Basically, what we're looking at is how the agency is tied to the 10-year plan. Pretty much the emerging issues that is occurring within the agency, which you guys have heard throughout the week here, is that we're trying to manage the IT investments, also the aging infrastructure needs that we have. In regards to the 10-year plan, DAS is associated with the improving government vision, that government is responsive, accountable, and trustworthy in meeting the needs of Oregonians. And we're trying to do that through streamlining government services to foster better collaboration, as we discussed, improve government engagement, transparency, and accountability, and to utilize and accelerate best practices in partnerships. Here's just a quick historical trend of the spending in the agency. As you can see in the 2011 biennium, DAS has very small amount of general fund and lottery fund dollars that comes into the organization. The general fund is mainly pass-through dollars that are out to other non-governmental entities. Lottery funds is that we allocate for debt service.
Representative yes. Nathan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've talked in previous committees at times about the color of money. If we looked at the source of your other fund before it came to your agency, at what proportion would have been general fund? 99%? 70%?
Co-Chair Smith, Representative Nathan, I don't have that historical information, but I believe at one time the assessments for the policy side was general funded.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nathanson, rule of thumb, about a third.
A third, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman,
yeah, please.
Members of the committee, I believe that this time around it's around closer to 40%.
Okay.
So general fund for this biennium and previous biennium, I think it was like about a third. So there's been a significant shift in the color of money paying the assessments. Oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to say that the state government service charges for 15-17 right now, I think the analysis is about 40%, a little over 40% is general funded. And I believe that number was closer to 35% last biennium.
And so I'm hoping for tomorrow we're going to have an opportunity to learn more about this.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Quickly, here is just a diagram of all the programs that you guys heard throughout this week here. As you can see, the policy side is just a very small portion of the agency. You can see the service side is about 47% of the agency. And everything else that's in the agency is either debt service funding or pass-through. Of course, and then also we have an Office of Administrative Hearings that is potentially going to transfer over here to the agency. Just really high level again, on revenue sources, the agency is funded on the operational side through assessments that's going to be on the policy functions and then charge for service on the service delivery side. There is small portions in the service delivery side that will have assessments. We'll explain that more tomorrow in the presentations. We do collect the lottery funds that transfers here to the state, and we transfer those dollars to the Economic Development Fund and the other sources there. General fund that's coming into DAS is mainly paid for debt service for some staff within economic analysis and just additional dollars for miscellaneous pass-through. Quickly, here are the various investments in the agency. They're not in priority order. We sort of went through a lot of it, but this one is just give you the dollar amounts. Again, we have about $25.9 million of other funds for the acquisition for the new HRS system that we discussed, in addition for a request to ask for 20 limited duration staff. We also have $2 million other funds for the capital facility planning. another $2.6 million for the STOS, the Strategic Technology Officers that we spoke about. Altogether, $83.6 million for capital construction projects, and then a proposal and to transfer the Office of Administrative Hearings over from employment to DAS. And last slide, I believe, and this is the other investments that we have. Again, we talked about today here about the North Campus Hospital. There's a request in for $8.3 million general fund. We also have $7.4 for general fund for establishment of a community leverage partnership fund, and $1 million for the state fair, and $1.9 for new debt service.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to flag this for discussion later on. I think it's my observation that we're doing something that the legislature typically does, and that is to kill something by a thousand little cuts. And the state fair, I'd like to know more about that. At some point, there was a plan to try, I think, to get that new configuration to a point where it didn't need state support. And if it is going to survive, hooray, the state fair is a venerable and much beloved tradition. If it isn't, let's figure that out sooner rather than later. And there may be people that were on the state fair committee. Representative Nathanson, were you on?
No, I just remember the bill where we transformed it.
I actually had a long meeting with Senator Durfler, who chairs that, earlier this session, because I had similar concerns. Senator Johnson, I'm happy to talk with you more about that, but I think we have some real issues, and your point is well taken.
Well, and it transcends the fair. It goes to other things. The subsidization of the train and the ridership on the train. To just keep pouring money into an enterprise that may or may not achieve escape velocity, I think is something that is a legitimate query for policymakers.
Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, I couldn't agree more.
It's three. It's like the trifecta.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
The state fairgrounds is in my district, and I do attend neighborhood association meetings around this topic, and I know there's some members in our chambers that are like that. State fair is sacred to them, but I promised my students 12 years ago when I left for office, they said, Ms. Comp, will you please get a Six Flags in Oregon? And seriously, and I mean serious, if we put Six Flags where the state fair is, we'd have a revenue generator, and we'd have something for our families to do year round. But that's just my request from, 50 students from 12 years ago.
Can I still showcase my Jell-O?
No.
We could have a little section of Six Flags that's kind of state fair related, like for the 4-H and the quilts, and I'm all good with that. Uh-huh. I like this plan, Representative Comp. I like it a lot. I'm a big roller coaster fanatic.
We can tinker with it.
I'm a big roller coaster fan.
All right.
You guys think we're not serious.
I'm very serious.
I have one last slide here.
Sorry. I apologize, Ms. Savara.
I wondered who I was all weak here, but anyway.
It has to do with roller coasters. No.
We're all good.
Anyway, so the last slide
here on one.
Is just basically some proposed revisions that we need as part of the governor's budget. As we talked about, we missed bringing over the governor's budget, the OHA case management package that they had. So we're going to ask to have that revised, and then DAS always has minor technical corrections in their budget. So appreciate your time.
Okay.
Any questions? Senator.
Mr. Jordan, do you have any concerns about the moving of the Office of Administrative Hearings to DAS? I mean, it's a rather large move. It's unclear where it should really be. Do you have any? Can you express an opinion on that,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Whitsitt? I think the reasoning behind the proposal from employment is solid reasoning regarding conflicts and arm's length and all of those issues. We do a lot of different things in our agency, and given the fact that we've acknowledged that there are certain indirect costs to support 100 plus folks, and that's been acknowledged and can be incorporated in the budget. I have no objections to having the as a division of DAS.
And you have room for the number of staff that work in Salem?
They actually would not leave their current location, so they, yes, we do.
Thank you.
Well, if I remember correctly, on one of those slides, the Department of Administrative Services had one of the fewest number of cases that were considered.
Yeah, of all the cases, I believe we had 9
Yeah,
total.
It was a low number
so,
there.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, Senator Johnson.
This is way down in the weeds, but would they just transfer laterally? There would be no salary adjustments or no change of job?
At least we're not proposing any, like, reevaluation of classification or anything like that. They will, however, those positions are within the overarching classification project for all managers.
As they should be.
Yes.
Any other questions? Anything else for the good of the order? Paul, anything we need to think about for tomorrow?
Mr. Chairman, as a committee, tomorrow, again, we'll have, I think, about the first half for the rates and assessments discussion, and then there'll be time for public testimony tomorrow as well.
Perfect. All right. Julie, anything? All right. We're good. We're going to adjourn.
Thank you.
We're good. We're going to adjourn.
Thank you.
All right.